Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Mad Hotep to everyone. Welcome to a special edition of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, also now known as Dr. Filet, and we are really, really pleased and just, you know, feeling incredibly great today. I mean, with all this going on, it's almost amazing to kind of have a good day sometimes, but we feel very blessed today, as with many days. But again, because this is a special edition, and usually, as you are probably aware, our programs tend to come on every Saturday night at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That's our regular program for New Day Resurrection. And, well, today is a special edition because obviously this is Wednesday, but certainly it is a wonderful Wednesday. With that said, this segment is going to be a kind of brief segment in comparison to what we normally do. And usually our program is at least 2 hours long, generally on Saturday. Today it will probably only be for about 30 minutes, but I can assure you it's going to be a power-packed program. Okay, with that said, we are going to begin very shortly, but before we do so, we always remind you that we give thanks and praises to our Creator, and certainly we are always very appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. Well, today we are going to talk about some very serious issues. Just to kind of give you a prelude of what's coming for Saturday, which, of course, is some of the latest murders that we have heard about this past week. And, of course, we are still reeling over the lack of response that people have kind of put out there in regards to the murder of a young sister, 23 years of age, Corin Gaines. So for our Saturday program, we are going to talk more about, again, the recent murders that we have heard about this past week or so, and then, of course, some of the ones that are still in our midst that we still need to look at closer. At any rate, today, this evening, rather, we are going to now talk about the Million Woman March and its universal movements. Of course, is preparing to make the official announcement for the long-awaited 20-year anniversary, 20-year reunion for the Million Woman March, and with that, bringing forward its universal movement. And so with that said, we're going to begin to share with you some of the real origins, some of the very beginnings of the Million Woman March, which surprisingly, as you will hear a little tonight and in the future, I really always admired, examined, felt the importance of the movements that came prior to now. And, of course, one of those movements had to be that of the Marcus Garvey UNIA ACL. And so tonight we are going to talk about the Honorable Marcus Garvey, the work that he not only brought forward, we talk about 2 million people at a time when, you know, black folks were still being hung, okay, right in your face, by the way, and relatively regularly, or if not hung, other atrocities. So to amass 2 million people worldwide is still amazing to me, okay? And so that's why I tell people today when they give me excuses about, well, why they didn't do this or why they couldn't do that and all of that, and I'm like, with all this technology, with all the capability, with all of the information, how dare you even begin to try to say what you can't do? Anyway, we'll talk more about that later. But what we are going to now get more into is what it is we've got to do now, why we've got to do it, and how we're going to do it. So with that said, you know, we would all be not only remiss but irresponsible, did not fight to maintain the legacies of our heroes and sheroes that have already shown us what to do, how to do it, and have given us so much. And so again, with that said, the Honorable Marcus Garvey gave to us so much then and now. So what are we going to do? What do we give back? How do we show our appreciation our love, our commitment? Well, we're going to talk about that tonight. And because New Day, the Men and Women Movement, is proactive, you all got an assignment, okay, one that I know that you're going to embrace, because our listeners definitely are the type of listeners that deal with honor, integrity, courage, and tenacity. So with that said, you're going to be asked to do some things tonight that is not burdensome, it's not difficult, but certainly it's necessary, and that is the exoneration. Let us continue to fight for our people, both past and present, but in this case, we're talking about the exoneration of the Honorable Marcus Garvey. So with that said, family, I want you to buckle up, because we're getting ready to really begin to talk about a situation that you all are probably very familiar with already, but at the same time, those who are not, you're going to be. And we're going to get ready to talk with the son of the Honorable Marcus Garvey, Dr. Julius Garvey. And I believe I do see him in queue, so bear with me. And without further ado, we're going to now introduce to you Dr. Julius Garvey. Greetings to you, Dr. Garvey.
Thank you. Good evening to you, and it's good to be on with you.
Yes, well, I'm seldom am lost for words, but I cannot just begin to tell you how very thankful we are to have you with us and that you've been able to take the time to join us for this segment and to share with us the information that you have for us. But before we go into the pressing issue at hand, would you please be so kind to just share a little bit about you, of course, but certainly about the Honorable Marcus Garvey?
Well, basically, you can draw a straight line from 1916 when my father came to this country to 2016. That's 100 years. And I know in 1916, 1917, something like 37, 38 black men were lynched. And I don't know how many black people have been shot in the streets or strangled or what have you this year. But, you know, it seems like not a great deal has changed. Yeah. Before, of course, you know, there were gangs of people, citizens, who would simply string us up. You know, strange fruit hanging on a tree. But
yes.
Now, of course, you have a militarized police so that the average citizen doesn't have to, stain their hands with the blood of the innocent blood of black people. But now you have a militia out there in blue that carries out what the KKK used to do. And I suppose we have the KKK in blue, which might be a harsh thing to say, but it's tiresome. Tiresome. It's like every day, every week, you know, you hear of somebody else who's unarmed, who's been shot and killed without justification. I mean, come on, these are human beings. These are divine creations. What is going on?
Yes,
You know, it's horrible. Anyway, my father came into that. And, you know, he had traveled the world in the Caribbean, Central America, and Europe, England and in Europe. And he's seen the conditions of African people, and he came to this country because he was influenced by Booker T. Washington and his book Up from Slavery, and he wanted to create a Tuskegee Institute in Jamaica to help to develop and lift the poor people there, you know, through training up in different skills, electricians, engineers, et cetera, because, you know, you have to have those skills to develop yourself and your community. So he saw, you know, Booker T's Tuskegee Institute as a wonderful technical college and a great start. So Booker T had died. He came. Moton was president of Tuskegee, and he met him, et cetera. He wasn't that impressed with Moton. And then he traveled throughout the country, 38 states in less than a year, on his own dime, you know, seeing the conditions of African people and talking to people in the North and the South. And eventually, he was influenced to stay because he founded the UNIA division in New York. He was influenced to stay. And you might say the rest is history. Within a very few short years, he had millions of followers. And, you know, I think within 2 years, he had 2 million. But overall, he had like 6 million followers. I mean, the numbers, even 6 million may be conservative. But, you know, this was what the people needed, because this was the 1914-18 war period. You know, black soldiers were coming back. They had fought for democracy overseas. They had been shot at, you know. Obviously, many had been killed. Some had been wounded. They came back. And they were still facing a lynch mob and no jobs at home and being treated like second-class citizens when they had fought for democracy. So all this was in the air. Plus the fact there was a large movement of African-Americans from the South to the North, because with the war, jobs were available. This was a period of industrialization. Young white men had gone to fight in the war in Europe, so this opened up jobs for black people. So, of course, you know, black people were running away from the KKK and the sharecropping, et cetera, and that came north. So within 5 years or so between, you know, let's say 1915, you know, and 1920, 1925, you know, like 2 million African Americans migrated from the South to the North. So all of a sudden, you had an urban population, the so-called urban ghettos. And again, you know, they met the racism of the North. So my father's message of, "Up, you mighty people, you can accomplish what you will, self-reliance, et cetera, look to Africa as the motherland, as the birthplace of your ancestors." You know, as he said, a people without a knowledge of their origins, history, and culture is like a tree without roots. So he said, we have to root ourselves in our history and our culture and, you know, develop where we are with our own resources and build our communities. So this was his message, one of self-reliance. And the UNIA, you know, spread in a sense like wildfire across the country.
Wow. All right. Well, again, family, you are hearing and we are talking with Dr. Julius Garvey, of course, the son of the Honorable Marcus Garvey. And, you know, I mean, certainly there's so much more to tell you about, and we will at some other point, but we want to now get to one of the important issues that is at hand. And again, we're going to talk more about the Honorable Marcus Garvey on our regular programming, which, of course, is Saturday at 10:30 p.m., and of course, we're going to continue to give you updates on the campaign that you're getting ready to hear about. And that campaign, again, is the exoneration of the Honorable Marcus Garvey. And with that said, we're going to go back to Dr. Julius Garvey and hear more about what this campaign, this national campaign, is about.
Well, first of all, you know, I want to say that he was spotted by a young J. Edgar Hoover, who I think everybody in America knows J. Edgar Hoover and what he stood for in terms of the perversion of his ideas and so on, and his white supremacy ideas. But he was spotted back in 1919, and J. Edgar Hoover said, there's a Negro agitator up in Harlem, and we've got to get him. We've got to find some way to get him and get him out of the country. Because, you know, what he meant by a Negro agitator was a Negro liberator of African people. And of course, he was drawing large crowds. The organization was growing by leaps and bounds. They were developing industry and so on. And ultimately, one of the big projects was the Black Star Line. And this is one of the things that J. Edgar Hoover said, hey, we have to find some way to get him on this. And if we can get a charge against him, we can get him out of the country. Of course, there had been an attempt on his life. He was shot at by somebody who came into the Liberty Hall, asked to see him, and shot three times. I think two bullets grazed him, one his leg and one his head. And that same person was apprehended, you know, by the UNIA members. The police came, took him to jail. And somehow that person committed suicide overnight in jail. You know, clearly what happened is that he decided he was not going to take the rap himself, and he was going to squeal. But anyway, that was the environment. And, of course, there was jealousy among other groups. Because even the NAACP, you know, had trouble getting members, and Marcus Garvey was getting members, you know, hand over fist. So there was significant jealousy among the different ideologies. There were some who were communists. There were some the African Brotherhood, you know, they were more into violence. So you had different ideologies, and you had, you know, the more the status quo type of people. And Marcus Garvey said, you know, you can't depend on others. You have to liberate yourself, you know, both in terms of your mind and in terms of your physical self. And you know, nobody can progress unless they have an economic base. And if you're in the periphery of somebody else's economy, he can always pull the jobs. And that's what we have now in our community. We don't have jobs because we've not created our own economic base in our own communities. This was the Garvey philosophy. So he was a target. And the whole trial about the Black Star Line, supposedly that they were selling stock in a company that was going bankrupt. But again, there was no evidence. The one piece of evidence that they had was an empty envelope, absolutely empty envelope. And the person who presented this envelope committed perjury. And he said that he did not know what was in the envelope. And he was told to lie about working for the UNIA by the district attorney that was prosecuting the case. So the attorney who was prosecuting the case committed perjury, you know, the witness committed perjury, and the judge should have recused himself because he belonged to an organization that was antagonistic to Marcus Garvey. So he should have recused himself from the trial. So the whole thing was a frame-up. Then there was supposedly conspiracy to defraud. Three other people were charged. All three of them were let go, and only Marcus Garvey then was charged. And the charge to the jury was, shall we let the tiger loose? So it was a very personal thing to get somebody who was a liberator for his people and who was gathering significant support to transform the conditions of African people in America. So this was the situation, and you know that went through the appeal process and everything. He ended up, you know, spending more than 2 years in Atlanta prison, and then in 1927, this was 25 to 27. The sentence was commuted by Calvin Coolidge because there were thousands and thousands of letters and demonstrations and rallies and so on, you know, in support of my dad. And you know, Calvin Coolidge wanted the vote at the election and so on was coming up, and he figured a way to do this. And, of course, they investigated the trial itself. And his attorney general told him that there was no a crime committed. So he commuted the sentence, but of course what they did was deported my dad immediately. He never even had time to settle the organization books or anything like that or write the organization in any way. So he was deported, you know, back to Jamaica, so that the movement itself then lost a certain amount of momentum, especially here in the United States. Of course, he carried on overseas. So what we have been doing, you know, and this is both the prime ministers of Jamaica, all of them since 1983, when Eddie Ciago came up and spoke to Reagan about it, all of them have asked the different presidents to exonerate him. Here in the United States, John Conyers, Congressman Conyers, held, he was head of the House Judiciary Committee in 1987. He had myself, you know, my brother, Bobby Hill, John Henry Clark, Tony Martin, Judith Stein, a bunch of us down to testify before the House Judiciary Committee about the case, et cetera, et cetera. But it never got out of the House Judiciary Committee. Congressman Rangel, ever since 2004, has been introducing, you know, legislation in the Congress, you know, HR, whatever the number is each year, and your House resolution and so on. But again, it has not, you know, developed the number of Congress people that needed to bring about this change. So this brings us up to date now. It's like the last legal maneuver that we have, which is to ask for a posthumous pardon from the current president. Now, we have presented the evidence. We've had a law firm, Akin Gump, which is a major law firm in Washington, D.C. They've gone over the case. They've shown everything, like, you know, that there was no evidence, et cetera. And we have had Charles Ogletree. He was a professor of law at Harvard University, you know, who has taught both Obama and his wife, Michelle, taught them constitutional law. He has signed on to the petition. You see, so that is what is sitting on President Obama's desk. And what we are asking people to do is to sign this petition. And they can go to the website, which is justiceforgarvey.org. And it's justice, the number 4, Garvey.org, and sign that petition. It's a two-step process, but there's a link directly to whitehouse.gov. So if you go there and look up petition, sign the petition, We need 100,000 signatures, and we need most of them within the next 7 days. So everybody really, really, really needs to buckle down and do it, you know, from your cell phone, from your computer, whatever it is. You don't even have to be a citizen. And the only ID you need is like an email address or something like that. So you know, it's very, very doable. It's very easy to do it. It will take you like 2 minutes. So please ask all of your listeners, et cetera. And I'm asking all of the listeners really to go out there because, you know, Marcus Garvey represented the ideals of African people all around the world. I mean, so many of our leaders, you know, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, have spoken highly of Marcus Garvey and said that he was the forerunner of the civil rights movement. You know, Kwame Nkrumah in Ghana, Nnamdi Azikiwe in Nigeria, Sam Nujoma in Namibia, Mandela in South Africa, the ANC in South Africa was birthed out of the Garvey movement. This is one of the groups that helped to form the ANC, the African National Congress in South Africa. Mm-hmm. Jomo Kenyatta in Kenya, he was a Garveyite. He met my dad in 1940 in England, you know, when he was a student. My father supported the West African Students Union, you know, and so that many of the African revolutionaries came under my father's teaching and then took that back now to Africa. So you know, that was the beginning of the end of colonialism through his teaching, just like the beginning of the civil rights movement here in the United States was through his teachings. So we need this, you know, to exonerate him so that they will remove the stain on his legacy because he's honored all over the world. You know, he's the first national hero of Jamaica. He's honored in almost every country that I know of. I've just come back from Halifax, Nova Scotia, you know, where they have the oldest UNIA still in existence there. And the memorabilia, I mean, this was what people had to lean on because there was nobody supporting black people except for the UNIA, you know, ACL, you know, because there were no governments to support them because this was the period of colonialism. So we had no black government. And, of course, the American government was not supportive of black people because a lot of people left the United States, went up to Canada, either with the Civil War or, you know, in the War of Liberation in 1776 or the War of 1812. Many fought for their freedom and on the side of the British and lost and then went to Canada. So you have a large, you know, black population, some from the United States, some from the Caribbean. So, you know, again, not being supported because they were immigrants and not being supported by anybody because they were seen as aliens. Yeah. But they had the UNIA, they had the organization. So they developed strong communities. And it was wonderful for me to see these things. And, I've traveled all over Central America and the Caribbean. I've traveled to multiple African countries and seen the way in which my dad is honored. As you know, the Black Star Line, the Black Star is a symbol for Ghana. Their athletes, the soccer players are the Black Stars. They have a Black Star in the center of their flag and so on. And many of the African nations have red, black, and green in the colors somewhere, which is an indication of their relationship to the red, black, and green of the UNIA and that they come out of that spirit of Pan-Africanism. So we need to clear his name because this is the only country in the world where he's still considered a criminal. And that says something about the judiciary here.
Absolutely. And many of us certainly know. Oh, my goodness. All right, family. Well, you have your writing instructions and your petitioning instructions. And, again, on Saturday we are going to reiterate some of this. We're not going to take calls for tonight because we want to be cognizant of our elders, age and just don't want them to overdo for right now. But hopefully he'll come back in the near future, and we will be able to maybe engage in some questions, but we're not going to do that for right now. Is that all right with you, Dr. Garvey?
That's okay, and I appreciate that because I have to go up to Hartford tomorrow where there's a ribbon cutting for a street area in Hartford that they're naming Marcus Garvey Place. So I have to get up early in the morning to drive up to Hartford for a 11 o'clock performance. So I don't want to stay up too late, so thank you for that. But I'll be happy to come back on your program sometime.
Wonderful. We certainly appreciate that. And let it be known, I'm going to make this official request that hopefully you will join us next year for the Million Woman March reunion. We would love to have you with us.
I would love that because, you know, my father was a feminist. I mean, women had a major place in the UNIA. So black feminism started in the UNIA, I can tell you that. So I can speak to that.
Well, what we do in this day and age, sir, is we make sure we don't be feminist because that has for us a kind of a smear on it right now and it's connected to some other people.
Yes.
But we are black women, and we are, we say, in fact, our theme is that we are the mother of civilization, okay? So we go beyond
Absolutely.
Feminism.
There's no question about that, and that goes all the way back to the earliest history. We're a matrilineal of people. I said one
no
day
doubt.
Matriarchal, but some people corrected me and said, no, matriarchal
right.
sounds too much like the opposite of patriarchal. So I said we're a matrilineal people. It starts with the mama.
Absolutely. And by the way, we are, yes, sir, we are doing our national Black Women's Political Convention next month, and we will be doing an Amy Jox Garby forum at that convention.
Oh, wonderful. That's my mom, and she was my dad's right-hand man. And, you know, she raised me. She was my mother and father because my father died, you know, when I was 7 years old, and the last time I saw him, I was 5 years old. So my mother raised me.
Yes.
She was my mom and my dad, and she was his right hand, and she was a stalwart, and she wrote the woman's page for the Negro world for years and years.
Absolutely.
So she was a great lady. So thank you for honoring her.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. We would be remiss because we know, you know, the history, and we want to make sure that others are more in tune to that history. So, Dr. Garby, again, I want to thank you, and I look forward to having you back soon, and have a safe journey tomorrow. And again, we love you, and we certainly love your father.
Okay, thank you, and I look forward to the next time.
Yes, indeed. Good, thanks. All right, family, well, you've heard it right here. And again, for more information, you can certainly contact us here at our New Day program, but via email. Of course, that's at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com. Or you can also send it to nationalmwminfo@gmail.com. Again, nationalmwminfo@gmail.com. I want to thank our brother, Shaka Barak, and of course our queen sister in the Chicago area, Sister Kamar Barak, because they were the ones that made this interview and this dialogue happen. And, you know, again, you know, sometimes you never know how much hard work it really takes to get something done. So we're really happy that they stayed focused and adamant and making certain that we were able to bring Dr. Garby to you. And as you heard, he will be joining us again in the very near future. And it's coming to the Million Woman March reunion. And remember, the official announcement, it's coming up October 25th this year when we do our National Black Women's Political Convention. There's going to be forums, and as we said, Amy Jox Garby Forum, Ida B. Wells Forum, Shirley Chisholm Forum. Believe me, we got it going on. We'll tell you more about that on Saturday. Our regular program, of course, 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and same place, same location, spread the word. We'll be black. We're going to get ready to close this segment out. And again, we remind you, we would love for you to communicate with us. And again, you can do that at nationalmwminfo@gmail.com or nationalmwm@aol.com. Okay? Until next time, this is Empress Chi, also known as Dr. Filet. And, wow, what can I say? I mean, just a wonderful dialogue, wonderful spirit. Family, you got to do this work, okay? Remember, go to Justice for Garby, okay? Again, Justice for Garby. Wait a minute, was that .com or .org? Oops, I got to check on that. I think it was anyway, Justice for Garby. If you punch it in, it'll come up. I'm almost sure it was justiceforgarby.com, okay? At any rate, you can always call us or, I mean, send us an email, but do it, please. Spread the word, okay? All right, family, until next time, promote you to the Shinda. Together we shall win. Peace out.